What is this? I don't recognize this song. Dan, what is this?
I have no clue what's going on.
I don't know what the hell. What is this?
What's your name again?
Huey Lewis. Oh, speaking of Huey Lewis, I believe one of our critics tonight was at the Huey Lewis concert last night.
Really?
Huey Lewis and the Gin Blossoms. How cool is that?
Wow, very nice.
Yeah. He took his DeLorean. Hold on.
All right.
First rim shot, being back. It's Nick DiGilio here live on WGN on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. I'm going to forget all my lead-ins. We are live on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower in the Allstate Studios. See?
As long as you get the plug-in,
It's like Allstate. It's like riding a bike. I got training wheels on right now, though, just so keep that in mind. No, of course, that theme means it's the Monday morning movie reviews, and my buddies who have been joining me for many years reviewing movies are here. Eric Childress and Colin Suter. Not only are we going to take a look at the box office returns for this weekend, Eric writes a piece, and we'll talk about that. They write for eFilmCritic.com, RogerEbert.com, as well as other places and doing other things. And not only will we talk about the box office, we'll review this week's new movies. And because I was gone for a year and 6 months, we will go back and look at some of the movies that we missed to review. So let's welcome to the show Eric Childress. Hello, Eric.
Hey, man.
Hey. And Colin Suter. Hey, Colin.
Hello there. Hey. Welcome back.
Thank you, sir. I'm thrilled to be back.
Thrilled.
We all are.
Well, thanks, man. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that, you guys. Hey, Colin, before we get to the box office for the week, tell everybody about your movie was screened at Schurz High School, two days ago?
Yesterday. Yeah, last night.
Last night meaning what, Friday night? No, Saturday night.
Saturday night.
Okay,
Saturday.
So that would actually technically be 2 days ago.
Right, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
You're right.
All right, so Saturday night, your movie, tell everybody about it.
It's a comedy called Meaningful Gestures.
And it's very good, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. It stars two kids who I've worked with in two previous short films. We've sort of crafted a trilogy now. It's an official trilogy. And it's kind of a fast-talking comedy, sort of Gilmore Girls-style dialogue about two kids who are, you know, trying to put aside their differences so they can cook a dinner for their parents who are celebrating their anniversary, but these parents are also on the verge of divorce. So they're just sort of like a last minute sort of thing to sort of maybe salvage the marriage. It played at the Prairie State Film Festival last night, did okay. And, you know, it's going to be playing at the Snake Alley Film Festival out in Burlington, Iowa in a couple weeks, and I'm going to go out there for it. That's a great film festival. That's the only shows short films.
Where does where does the name come from? Do you know, Colin?
It's Snake Alley is this street in Burlington. It's the crookedest street in the United States. Yeah, and it's like a snake. It has a snake formation that you can drive down it, but it's like driving. It's like driving down this squiggly line, and it's an historic town. It's one of the things about the town that makes it unique and historic, and really sort of old fashioned small town feel to it. And I've been there before. It's a great film festival. I love going back there, so I'm looking forward to that. And then it's going to be playing in Ohio. I can't remember the name of the town, but the festival is called the Indie Gathering. And we've already won a third place award for best comedic short. So that's fun.
Yeah.
So for that, I'll drive out there. If you give me an award, sure, I'll show up.
Yeah.
So we're doing okay.
Congratulations. Doing right. Now, okay, is it available online? Can people actually see these films online?
The first two, yes, March, April, and Folktale are available online. If you go to my website, multiheadproductions.net, just click on the movie posters on the front page, and it'll take you right to the page where you can watch the film and read about it. This one, not yet, because it's in the festivals, and I don't really want to give it away just
gotcha.
Yet. So,
got it.
Yeah, but
right,
by the end of the year, by Christmas, it'll be up available because it is a Christmas movie. So,
yes. Yeah. All right, cool. Multiheadproductions.net.
Yep.
All right, cool. Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's get to the box office the 3-day box office returns. And Eric, you wrote a story about that, and we always talk about that. That's the first thing we jump into on the Monday morning movie. And by the way, I don't think people – let me just say this before we jump into the box office and the movies. Let me just say, I think people missed my dad's joke more than they missed me. So indeed – yeah, we will hear from my dad, who will tell a joke at 4:45-ish break right here. We'll be back in. We'll get back in the groove of things. I'm just so happy to be back. God. All right, Eric. Let's Eric, Colin. Let's talk about this. Number one movie over the weekend is Ant-Man, $58 million. It's interesting how you broke this down, Eric. There are kind of two ways of looking at this, correct?
Yeah. Two different sort of stories going on. I mean, for one, it's number one movie of the week, obviously, so that, you know, that's a good thing. That's where Marvel wants to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, some people are going, well, $58 million for a Marvel movie, that's not that, you know, is not that high. But I think this is sort of a case of, you know, people getting so used to seeing these sort of these mega giant openings for Marvel movies. You know, part of that, you know, obviously spurred up by Guardians of the Galaxy last summer, which was sort of a second tier storyline that, you know, maybe not as many people were familiar with. I know I certainly wasn't.
No, I wasn't either. And you know what's amazing about that? You point this out in the piece that you wrote, in the box office piece that you wrote, is that nobody expected that movie to do the kind of numbers it did. I certainly didn't.
No, it was, and Ant-Man is sort of like as big a mystery as Guardians of the Galaxy was. No one was really could really pinpoint precisely what this thing was going to do. But when you look at, you know, the sort of the entire Marvel list, not just sort of the, you know, the Marvel Universe Phase 1, Phase 2, all this, you know, these nonsense and whatnot, just Marvel movies, anything that has association with the Marvel logo, you know, and that includes your X-Men movies, you know, on like 28 of the 38, I think that's the numbers, right, have done over $50 million in their opening weekend. So, like, anything under $50 million, I think, would have been a disappointment for Ant-Man. But $58 million, that's, you know, the only films that have really beaten it are the ones that have, you know, real big name recognition to them. I mean, you're talking all the Iron Man movies, which was, you know, became a success because of where it was slotted in the summer and because of the Robert Downey Jr. casting and whatnot. Your Avengers movies, you know, one of the Captain Americas, your Spider-Mans, your X-Men. These are the names people know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
$58 million for a Paul Rudd comic book movie?
Yeah.
I think they should be very happy with that.
I saw it on a Saturday at a 5 o'clock showing, and I was kind of surprised I thought it would be wall to wall. It was maybe a little over half full on a Saturday evening at 5 o'clock. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean. I saw it with my parents, who, by the way, don't know Marvel from their elbow.
Yeah.
And loved every – my dad went nuts. My parents loved it. We'll get into the review of it a little bit later on, what we thought of it. But I was actually surprised. I mean, we bought our tickets, because I stayed with my parents for almost, you know, over 3 weeks as I was being recovered. I stayed at my folks' house. And so we bought the tickets on Thursday just so, you know, you want to make sure you want to get in. And I thought, okay, well, we'll get the tickets on Thursday. We'll order them online and all that stuff. And we really didn't need to, which I was kind of surprised about. But, you know, $58 million for a Paul Rudd thing. And we'll get into the review of that a little bit later on. Number two, Minions made $50 million, bringing its total up to $216.6 million. How is that compared to the Despicable movies?
Well, Despicable Me 2, which at the time was actually the highest grossing film in the history of Universal Studios. Think about that number for a second.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and Minions currently is like $31 million ahead of the pace of where Despicable Me 2 was. I think the drop this weekend was a little steeper than the Despicable Me 2 drop. But it's right now it's ahead of the pace. It got off to a stronger start than Despicable Me 2. So this thing is probably, you know, should pass the $300 million mark with no problem.
Yeah.
$50 million in the second week is nothing to sneeze at. And it'll be the first time in history that any studio has had three $300 million grossers in a single year.
Holy cow. What are they?
Well, it would be this, Furious 7, and, what was the other one?
Jurassic World?
Jurassic World. Thank you very much.
Oh,
Tom.
God. Jurassic World. Jurassic World.
I don't think of that in the $300 million category.
No, that's
in the $600
million
category.
That's in the $600 million category.
Yeah.
Incredible. It's funny. My parents haven't gone out to the movies in a long time. I stayed with them for 3 weeks. They went three times.
Yeah,
so I've been, it's like, let's go to the movies. So they saw Minions. I didn't see it.
Uh-huh.
I chose the night that they saw Minions, I went to go see The Gallows. We'll talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit later on.
It's amazing you're back after seeing The Gallows.
Oh, man. And you know what? Let me tell you something, you guys. That was the first damn movie I saw in like 3 weeks.
Yeah,
that was the first movie I saw out of the gate. You know what I mean? I was away from the movies. I was recovering.
If you didn't see that, you might have been back a week earlier.
All right. Well, okay. Number three, Trainwreck with $30.2 million. This has got to make everybody involved with this movie happy.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, people, you know, I've been sort of going back and forth, you know, these like tracking companies that, you know, they figure out, you know, how the advertising's going and awareness and all this stuff, and they sort of figure out, you know, what movies are going to make. These idiots have been wrong, like, all summer, pretty much. You know, there's everything, you know, Ted 2 and Jurassic World, you know, they don't see any of these things coming. And, you know, earlier this week they had Ant-Man going past $70 million, and they had Trainwreck in, like, maybe doing $20
million. Mm.
You know, so, like, these tracking companies should not be trusted going forward. The Trainwreck, they should be extremely happy with that number.
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, granted, I was, you know, incredibly sick of the Amy Schumer train. You know what I mean? I was like, okay, look, I can't. Every time I turn on the TV, she's there. Every time I open up a newspaper, there she is. I go to I go online, and there's I'll go to like a homepage or something. There's 15 stories about Amy Schumer. I'm like, all right, enough.
Yeah.
And then
that's what they had to do, though. She's never been in a movie before, and you know, people, you know, she's, you know, obviously gained some success, you know, over the last
Well, this last season of her show was the best season.
That
she's had, and the strongest showing that she's had.
Mm-hmm.
I still prefer Broad City and Key and Peele, but that's just me.
You're right about one of those.
Which one, Key and Peele?
That's right.
Yeah, Broad City's hilarious, man.
It's not, but okay.
Trainwreck, big hit. How do you see it doing next week?
I think it's going to hold up very well. I wouldn't be surprised if it's still in the the lower 20s. By next week. I think the word of mouth, I know some people that have seen it are really big fans of it. I think this is going to be one of the stronger word of mouth showings of the year.
Let me tell you this. A lot of ladies at the screening I went to.
Oh, yeah. A
lot of ladies. And evidently they're not really all going to see Magic Mike.
No, they went to Trainwreck to see John Cena.
They went okay. Number four is Inside Out, $11.6 million, the latest from Pixar. One of the very best movies of the year. We've talked about it. $306 million total. How's that holding up against other Pixar numbers?
Well, Colin, I'm sorry to say, it's not the lowest grossing Pixar film.
Don't be sorry. Are you kidding me?
I'm so happy that you were wrong, and I mean that in the best possible way.
Me too. I'm completely thrilled that I'm wrong.
It's fantastic. It's only the third Pixar movie to actually gross $300 million here in the U.S.
Mm. Wow.
And
that's
it's great. Only about, I think it's like $33 million away from passing Finding Nemo, which is quite an accomplishment because the only film after that is Toy Story 3.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Tremendous. So people are loving it. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's really great. Good. What is the lowest grossing Pixar movie? Do you know, Eric?
Is it a Bug's Life? I think it's a Bug's Life.
Oh, man, that's one of
my favorites, man. It's a Bug's Life or Cars 2, but I think it's a Bug's Life.
Should be Cars 2.
It's, yes.
All right.
Well, Bug's Life makes sense because it was going up against Ants. So, you know, Ants, I think.
Ants sucked.
At the same time.
Ants sucked. That movie sucked. Woody Allen. All right.
Oh, I like Ants.
Yeah.
Me too.
All right.
Yeah.
They're both drunk. All right. Hang on a second. Eric is here. Colin is here. And we're reviewing the movies after a 14-month break. Right, Dan? 14 months, was it?
Give or take a week.
Yeah, it was a prison term I had to take care of. Movie reviews are back. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. And then I'm going to hang out with the Steve Cochran bunch. And I'm back, and I'm really, really happy to be back. And we are doing the movie reviews as we do every Monday morning. All right, number five, we're going down the box office list. Ant-Man, $58 million, number one. Minions, number two with $50 million. Trainwreck, number three with $30.2 million. And number four, Inside Out with $11.6 million. Number five, hey, guys, remember when Chris Pratt was just Andy and he had the busted leg and he was dating Rashida Jones and living in the apartment like a...
You mean the co-star of Take Me Home Tonight?
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you add up this guy's box office totals now... it's insane. All right, Jurassic World, $11.4 million, bringing its total up to $611 million, which I got to tell you, is Eric, in your opinion, as the person who puts together like the box office analysis, is this the most insane box office story of the year? Is this like the most surprising?
Yeah, yeah. And anyone who denies that is lying, you know, or trying to cover themselves for making really bad predictions because – No one had this thing at $200 million opening weekend. No one thought that this movie was going to challenge the Avengers or be one of the highest grossing films of all time, which it's going to be. As of probably by next weekend, even this week, the worldwide box office and the U.S. box office is going to be third all time, just behind Avatar and Titanic.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
That is really unbelievable. Wow. Number six, which you guys will review for me because I didn't get a chance to see it, is
I didn't see it either.
Oh, Colin didn't see it either. So, Eric, you're going to have to review it for us.
All right.
Terminator Genesis. And I'm not I haven't seen the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not quite – what the hell's the deal with the spelling of Genesis? Is that like the name of the – like a program or something in the
– Yeah, the Genesis is like the operating system in the movie that essentially is basically Skynet.
Oh,
basically,
okay.
In the movie that this program is being like, you know, buy Genesis. You know, there's a countdown to Genesis.
Okay.
And everyone's going to get it, and then Skynet's going to hook into all their apps and computers and stuff and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. we'll talk about that one later, bringing its total to $80 million. Now, how is that holding up against the other ones?
That's a bomb.
That's
a bomb. Yeah, that's one of the bigger bombs of the summer. It's made its money overseas. It's done like $175 million overseas, but this thing's going to struggle to make $100 million in the U.S., and it's not even going to make as much as the McGee Terminator film.
Ugh.
Yeah.
This was basically Schwarzenegger's last hope for a hit, right? I mean,
kind of.
I mean, him going back and playing the Terminator again, he must have thought, well, this will, if this doesn't, you know, put me back in the, you know, the 100 million, you know, grossing category, then nothing will.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? True.
Now, what did he have? He had that crazy I'm a sheriff and all kinds of craziness is going to happen movie. What the hell?
The Last Stand.
Johnny Knoxville thing, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, from the director of The Good, the Bad, and the Weird.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. And he had, what else did he have? He had the movie with him and Stallone getting out of jail.
Escape Plan,
right.
Yeah, he had did you see the zombie movie he did this year?
No. I actually heard that was pretty good.
Well, it's not bad. It's not really good.
Okay.
But it's not bad. Maggie, where the movie we're talking about.
What's the
name
of the movie, yeah.
Yeah. There's something else in there that were... the Sabotage.
Oh, yeah.
That was just awful.
Yeah. David Ayer directed that, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, all right. So Terminator Genesis isn't even going to do as well as...
Oh, good for you!
So
exactly.
All right. Number seven, Magic Mike. What the hell? Double XL?
Yeah.
Okay, so what is that? Oh, is that a penis thing? Is that what that is? Am I finally getting that now?
Yes.
This movie's been, I must have been really sick.
Yes.
I must have been really sick to not get that that's a large penis reference.
Well, it's either that or the size of the underwear holding the penis.
Oh, brother.
So.
Oh, man.
Just the way Soderbergh had intended when he made the original. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure he's thrilled.
Right. What does Christian Bale have to say about large penises?
No, wait a second. Hang on a second. There we go.
Oh, good for you.
Okay, so $4.5 million, bringing its total up to $58.6 million. What did the original do?
113.
Okay.
Yeah, so it had a bigger opening, bigger start, but this film still only cost like $14 million or something like that. So this is more than a hit for Warner Brothers.
Wait a minute. You mean they didn't have to pay Kevin Nash $50 million?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, they did not.
Okay. let's finish this off real quick so we can take a break here. The Gallows comes in at number 8, which we will talk about later, $4 million, mm-hmm. bringing its total up to 18. Number 9, Ted 2, $2.7 million, $77 million total. That's got to be a disappointment considering how much money the first one made.
Yep.
And number 10, making mucho money here in a small amount of theaters, $2.4 million, Mr. Holmes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Ian McKellen, I'm an old dude, Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
Teamed up with a really young dude.
Oh, is he teamed up with a young dude?
It's a kid, yeah. He's teamed up with a kid in it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, well, there you go. Your box office Ant-Man, $58 million is the winner this week, even though some people are still maintaining it's a loser. All right. When we come back, guys, you essentially are going to be reviewing movies that I did not get a chance to. Well, actually, there is one that I saw, and it's The Gallows. So hang on, guys, okay? We'll be right back. Nick Cotillio here. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. It's Monday morning, and that means it's time for the Monday Morning Movie Reviews with Eric Childress and Colin Suter. We did the box office analysis, and now it's time to jump into some movies. Now, as you may or may not know, I've been gone for a little while. I was sick and in the hospital for a little bit, and then stayed at my folks' house for a few weeks to recover, and now I'm back. And as a result, I missed a bunch of movies, and we missed a couple of weeks. How many? Three? Dan, is it three?
Maybe four with one sneaked in between.
Okay. All right. So we welcome back Eric and Colin. And let's look at some of the movies that we missed. Now, we mentioned Magic Mike Double XL and the fact that I just realized that that was a penis reference. Because I'm dumb. But none of us have seen it.
No.
Okay. How are the reviews generally for it? Are they mixed?
Middling.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, to me, you know, you take away Soderbergh, you take away McConaughey, and what's there left?
I agree.
You know? So, and I wasn't really a big fan of the first one to begin with. So, but, every, you know, the reviews are kind of a little reflective of that.
I liked the first one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were things about it that I liked overall. I was pleasantly surprised by Olivia Munn's nude scene.
Okay, we all were.
Which I was just like, well, this is a delight.
Yeah. Well, you had to give something for the, like, if the guys are, like, going to see that movie, you might as well hit that up in minute one.
But that's the thing. I didn't expect it. You know what I mean? First of all, I didn't expect her to get naked.
Mm-mm.
At all.
Right.
And then second of all, I just thought, okay, this is going to be dudes in you know, in banana hammocks, dancing around.
Mm-hmm.
That, and fine, I'm fine with that. And then she's like topless, and I'm like, oh, this gets a star already.
Right.
So there you go. All right, well, let's get to it. Colin, tell us about Amy.
All right. Well, this is the documentary about the short career of Amy Winehouse, who started out as, you know, an obscure nightclub jazz singer in London, but who, you know, eventually rose to fame in the mid-2000s with her song Rehab. One of the most blatant autobiographical songs to ever become a big hit, and basically tells a big part of the film's story about how she became such a media magnet, not just, not just for her music, which was brilliant, but because of her offstage antics and relationships. Particularly with the love of her life, who also got her addicted to drugs, heroin, pretty much. And the film chronicles basically her life story in 2 hours, and from childhood to death. And it is really a moving and deeply tragic film, and really beautifully made, because the film doesn't resort to a lot of, you know, the documentary tropes. It doesn't have, never uses footage of talking heads, and nobody's talking to the camera in this film, but everybody's, you know, telling the story, and we just get, you know, a caption of who is talking as we watch, you know, home movies and footage of Amy Winehouse and her band and all the people in her life. And it's a really, it's a really good, you know, welcome device for a film like this, because, you know, it's her life, you know, unfolded before the cameras all her life. There was always a home movie being shown, and then, of course, you know, the paparazzi, she just became a magnet for that, and so the movie is entirely visual, and, you know, I think if you're only just sort of, you know, sort of familiar with her music, maybe all you know is Rehab and that's it, I still think this is a really compelling story, you know, very sad and very tragic, but also very, very heartfelt, very appropriate, and really, you know, put together by people who really care about her life and her music. Hmm. I have one little issue. I mean, it's kind of a personal thing. It's not necessarily criticism, but, you know, the movie does make a big point of, you know, the paparazzi just constantly, you know, being on her case and being, you know, in her life. Just constantly surrounding her, and the movie uses paparazzi footage to its own advantage. And that kind of rubs me the wrong way, but at the same time, you know, it does tell the story. So it's one of those sort of ethical morality things that I wrestle with. But it doesn't deter from the fact that this is a really well-crafted documentary.
You know, I got to say, I'm really surprised at how many theaters it's playing at.
Yeah, you know, I am too, but in a way I'm not, because, you know, that name still rings a bell with a lot of people and a lot of young people. I mean, it hasn't been that long since she died.
Right.
And I think people are curious to see the whole story just sort of unfold in a, you know, convenient 2 hour format.
Yeah.
It's still pretty raw, and her music is still getting played on the radio. So. Yeah.
Well, it's playing at seven 17 local theaters. Check your local guide. Check the intranets for that. But that's Amy. All right, I'm going to catch up on that one for sure. No question about it. All right, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Terminator Genesis.
Okay.
And this has nothing to do with Phil Collins.
It does not. Okay. Unfortunately.
All right, Patrick Bateman. All right. Yeah,
that's right. That's right.
Well, Genesis has already been terminated anyway, right?
Hello. Wait a minute.
Okay, Okay. Hey, Christian Bale. Colin made a joke.
Hold on a second. You guys are. All right, hang on. I'm not Johnny B. For God's sake.
Oh, come on.
All right, here we go.
Good for you.
There we go. Right.
Thank you. Okay, so Terminator Genisys is the fifth film in the Terminator franchise, and the movie picks up basically in the future from what we remember from the original film, where the War of the Machines has been going on, and the leader, John Connor, discovers that The machines, in a last-ditch effort, have sent a Terminator back in time to kill his mother. So,
I've never heard that plot before.
Never heard that story before, huh? Yeah, and so he's going to send back he actually has a volunteer from his squadron, if you will, Kyle Reese, who is not played by Michael Biehn in this movie. He's played by Jai Courtney. We all love Jai Courtney, don't we?
Oh, he's fantastic.
Yeah, a.k.a. franchise killer.
Yeah.
So Jai Courtney as Kyle Reese goes back into time, back to the year 1984. The first thing to arrive, though, is the Terminator. And what we find out is that there's another Terminator waiting for him. Now, how is this possible? And so Kyle Reese shows up and basically going through the exact same motions of footage that we saw from James Cameron's 1984 film, then discovers that there's already a really sort of tough-as-nails, buffed-up Sarah Connor waiting for everyone, for Kyle Reese to show up. And anyone who's familiar with the 1984 film realizes that this is not how this story goes. And it turns out that there have been more sort of time travel shenanigans going on, and a Terminator was actually sent back in time to when Sarah Connor was a 9-10-year-old child.
All right. You know what? I have no idea what the hell you're talking about right now.
No? No? Yeah. I've lost you already?
I don't know what the hell's going on.
Let me put it in simplest terms for you. This is basically Back to the Future Part 2 if it sucked. Okay? That's essentially the kind of thing they're going for, where they're basically creating these alternate timelines where everything is completely jumbled up, and you have a good Terminator with a buffed-up Sarah Connor and a very confused now Kyle Reese trying to save the world again. There are more twists and turns if you've seen some of the trailers for the film, which gives away sort of the one big plot twist.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've seen that. I won't spoil that for anyone who hasn't watched.
Who doesn't have a television?
Exactly.
Right.
But that twist, for people who do know what it is really sort of a giant slap in the face to everything that the Terminator films stand for, because we know that this one particular character is sort of central to the entire universe, and by doing what they do to him, it basically sort of throws the entire series in turmoil, and we have absolutely nothing to root for except waiting to see if a bickering Kyle Reese and Sarah Connor will finally get down and make the love so they can create this character who will then end up betraying everyone. This movie sucks. This movie makes the McGee film watchable.
Whoa, whoa, whoa,
wow.
whoa, wait a minute.
Oh, good for you.
Thank you. I when I got out of this movie, I wrestled with the idea of, because Terminator Salvation is a terrible movie.
Yeah.
It's a terrible movie. But walking out of this movie and being so outraged at just how the action isn't particularly good. The storyline, the screenplay is absolute garbage. Jai Courtney, for God's sakes. I wrestled with the idea of just like, is this movie worse than Terminator Salvation? And I had to say yes, because of the giant poop that this movie takes on the entire series.
Yeah.
Terminator Salvation was just kind of a bad movie by a bad filmmaker.
Right.
It was kind of its own thing. It was kind of its own entity.
Yeah. Evidently it had a bad DP.
Oh, good for you.
Right, and Sam Worthington. Sam Worthington makes Jai Courtney makes Sam Worthington look like Christian Bale, I guess.
Oh,
I don't know.
God.
Yeah. This is absolutely one of the worst films of the year, one of the worst films of the summer, the worst film in the Terminator franchise. It should just kill the series.
Okay. Man. All right, there's been five of them. I kind of lost track. I like the first three. I will stand by that third one.
Good. I'm glad you stand by it, because apparently the filmmakers don't, because the only way that this movie actually exists is if they completely ignore the events of Terminator 3.
Oh.
So basically, they threw out Terminator 3 in the same way that
H2O.
H2O, you know, Superman Returns sort of throughout,
yeah,
you know, the post-Superman 2 movies and things like that.
I love that Halloween H2O just ignored four movies.
Yeah.
That, like, that these four movies didn't have, never happened.
Right.
All that crap with Danielle Harris. No. That
right.
Never happened.
All in your imagination.
Exactly.
Move along.
Which is fine with me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. This Terminator Genesis. It sucks.
Oh, good for you.
All right. Guys, hang on. We got more movies that we have to catch up on, and then we got the new movies from this weekend to talk about. It's Movie Reviews with Eric Childress and Colin Suter on a Monday morning on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here until 5 a.m., and then we'll hang out with the Steve Cochran gang. I'll be heading down there to hang out with them around 5:30 for the first part of the show as Steve makes his way in. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday morning for the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. I was off for a few weeks out sick, and so we've got a couple of movies to catch up on. Eric, Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
Hello.
All right. Colin, tell us about Minions.
All right. This is a prequel to the Despicable Me films, and it's an origin film about the little yellow guys who talk gibberish and wear overalls and who get into Three Stooges-like antics and comedy bits. And this film takes the characters from the prehistoric age all the way to the 1960s in Paris, or eventually gets to Paris, I think. Anyway, they get involved. First, they go to a supervillain convention where they meet Scarlett Overkill, who's voiced by Sandra Bullock, and her husband, who's voiced by John Hamm. And they get involved. The minions, get involved in a plot involving in these supervillains and their plots to take over the world. And it's just three minions initially, and the other hundreds or so minions, eventually make their way to find them and to, wreak havoc. So it's kind of a it sort of tries to maintain the spirit of Despicable Me by having these supervillains and all of them are trying to be like the top villain in the world. But unfortunately this movie lacks a lot of things that I like about the first two Despicable Me movies, and those movies are far from great, but there's things about them that I like, one of which is that they have a heart to them. The Steve Carell character has to care for these three or four little girls, and there's a little bit of an emotional pull in those films that this film lacks. This is kind of this movie relies too heavily on the human characters to carry it, and the human characters just aren't that funny or interesting. And the minions themselves are, also just not that funny this time around. They got a lot of, I think, lame joke writers or lame gag writers on this thing. That really just the whole idea of a Minions movie, which should be great, I was looking forward to it, just doesn't really take off that much. It just kind of sits there for a while. And I think I only really laughed hard a couple times, one of which involving a guitar towards the end, a Pete Townsend thing. But other than that, the movie just kind of feels pretty labored. And sort of gives you too much of a good thing, but without doing what made it a good thing in the first place.
Mm.
So this is a pretty disappointing movie.
Okay.
And my expectations weren't even that high to begin with. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, if it means anything, my parents loved it.
Yeah.
My parents had a blood. They haven't seen the other two. They didn't see Despicable Me's at all.
Okay.
And they just, my mom and dad both think the minions are hilarious. Anytime they go, they laugh. So
they have been funny. I mean, yeah. I do like the minions.
By the way, do you know that it's one dude doing all the voices?
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, Pierre Coffin is his name. Pierre Coffin. He does the voices of every minion. That must have driven him nuts.
That's gibberish. I mean, I guess you get good at it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to do gibberish well. I think he does gibberish very well.
Yeah.
The same way Charlie Chaplin did in The Great Dictator. Ah, he does gibberish, you know.
All right, Eric,
isn't he just French?
Eric, we got about we've got a little less than a minute. What did you think?
Yeah, I don't like it.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with so much of what Colin said there, and you know, but when they allow the Sandra Bullock supervillain to sort of supervillainess to take over, the movie really you know downshifts into just something that's just not that interesting. They don't really evolve her character enough. And Colin's right. I mean, the minions just aren't given much to do that's funny this time. I wasn't a fan of the two Despicable Me movies, funny enough, for the reasons that Colin actually liked the movies. But I did like the Minions. And I just, this movie, I was kind of bored to it. It just wasn't very funny not good.
Okay. All right. By the way, Pierre Coffin is a co-director on it.
Yeah.
Okay, so the guy who does the voices of the Minions co-directed this movie. Interesting. Okay. Well, I didn't like the two Despicable Me. Eric, you and I are on the same page on the Despicable Me movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I did think the Minions were hilarious. And I was actually looking forward to this because, you know, like in the second Despicable Me, there were more Minion scenes. And
yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, well, this is funnier. But, okay. Well, I haven't seen it, so I don't know what the hell's going on. But my parents loved it. So if that means anything. All right, we got to take a quick break. We come back. We have to talk about The Gallows. And then we'll talk about the new movies that just came out this weekend with Eric and Colin on 720 WGN. And we're going to go to the news. All right, we'll take a break when we get the news coming up right after this. Dick DiCilio here, live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5, and then after 5:30 I'll be hanging out with the Steve Cochran gang. I am back, as you can tell, because you can hear my voice. I was out sick. I was ill and out. I was in the hospital for a while and then recovered at my folks' house for a few weeks, and now I'm back. So for those of you who are just waking up, thank you for all of the really kind messages and get well wishes and prayers and thoughts and all that cool stuff. It helped me a lot. There's no question about it. I'll tell you the reasons why I was out and why I got sick. It was stupid, in fact, and I will explain how all that happened a little bit later on. But I know a lot of people are getting up right now, and it is me. It's Nick DiCilio. I'm back. And I was out for a while. I'll explain why, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew. But right now we're in the middle of the movie reviews, which happen every Monday morning, as well as a little bit later on in the 4:45-ish break, my dad will tell a joke. And as I mentioned earlier, in case you weren't listening, I think most people missed my dad's jokes more than they missed me. I think that's actually the case. But thank you, guys. I'm back. I will explain to you why I was sick and all of that stuff. I'm not going to give you all the details. I will give you a little Cliff Notes version of what happened. We'll do that a little bit later on. But I wanted to make sure that you all knew that, yes, this is it. This is it. I'm back. Everything is good. And I am now with my friends Eric Childress and Colin Suter reviewing the movies. Eric and Colin, welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Hello.
Okay. All right, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about The Gallows.
The Gallows. Okay. So some 20 years ago or so, a high school in Nebraska mounted this play called The Gallows. On stage, it featured, obviously, a gallows. And one of the students playing the lead role had his neck in the gallows. And so there was a malfunction, and he ended up hanging and dying. So 20 years later, inexplicably, the same school has decided to mount the same play as a tribute. Okay, so suspend your disbelief immediately, and you have characters who are setting up to do this play, including one of the school's jocks, who's basically doing the play to get close to so this girl, a theater major, I guess, who he has kind of a crush on. His friend a real jackass of a character.
One of the most obnoxious characters in cinema history.
Agreed completely. And he's the one controlling the camera, folks, because this is found footage, baby.
Yep.
This is some found footage crap. And he's controlling the camera, and he's speaking into the camera and speaking behind the camera and filming everything. Regardless, we're ignoring the big fact here is that Charlie, the guy that got hung 20 years ago, is apparently haunting the school. And he is going to wreak havoc on these kids and basically try to hang them, literally hang them with a noose one by one until they're dead.
Yeah.
What can I say?
Yeah. You know what? Let me tell you
something. It's already been said in the plotting.
Yeah.
This movie is absolute garbage. No creativity whatsoever. The found footage thing is as dumb as it's ever been in this movie. Sometimes, you know, the movie, you know, at the beginning of the movie tells you, well, this is the found footage from the police department records and whatnot. And yet, you know, the movie's been cut together completely professionally through cell phones and, you know, like six different cameras being used, you know, throughout the film.
Yeah.
And it's all been pieced together, you know, to create the, like, one of the worst found footage movies ever released in a theater. Maybe the worst. It's not scary. It's every, you know, scare in the movie is just a giant noise. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It ends. The ending is so ridiculous and stupid. And I've asked questions of Colin. I shouldn't be asking questions of really stupid movies. But basically, for the quote unquote plan for work, one character would have had to have been held back a couple of years. Would they have not, Nick?
Yeah.
You know what I'm referring to?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if we're to believe that one character is related to another character.
Yeah.
That person's plan, you know, would have had to have had them held back. I don't know. We're discussing one of the dumbest movies of the year. It's garbage. I hope you didn't waste your money on it. It's terrible.
It's a horrible movie. All right, Colin.
Yeah. I agree with everything Eric just said. And, you know, and I've enjoyed some of the found footage movies. And, you know, I've enjoyed the technique of some of them. But then there's stuff like this, like where, you know, the main character is holding the camera to his face while giving this impassioned speech to the person that he's talking to. And he's like, wait a minute, who does this? You know, or, you know, while they're hugging somebody and he's crying, he's filming himself crying. I mean, it's just like, okay, come on. you know, if you're going to try to pass this off as something as authentic and natural so that we're really there and it's happening. You know, you gotta not stretch it so much. One of the absolute worst films of the year.
It is absolutely one of the worst movies of the year. Not even remotely scary. There's nothing about this movie that's good. I couldn't believe how bad it was. I was like sitting in the theater, and this is the first movie I've seen that I got to see. You know, I was sick, and I hadn't seen a movie in a few weeks, and I was really like antsy to see a movie. And I was like, okay, you know, right out of the gate, I'm going to go see a horror movie. It's my favorite genre. So my parents went to the theater, and they went to go see The Minions, and I went to go see The Gallows, and I made the mistake. You guys have to admit The Minions is better than The Gallows.
Absolutely.
Okay. So yeah. I go see The Gallows, and I hated every second of it, and completely unoriginal, with one of the most unlikable characters ever in charge of the camera. There's nothing scary about it. All whatever scares they have or jump scares are cheap and unearned. The ending is absolutely ridiculous. And they actually have the nerve and the cojones at one point. Now, you know, Frank Gifford and Kathy Lee Gifford's daughter.
Yes.
Is the blonde sort of like a hot chick in it.
Mm-hmm.
At one point in the movie, and I sat in the theater and I couldn't believe this. They had the cojones to put the camera close up in her face in the dark with like a light on her. Okay. In the dark with a light on her, close up in her face as she cries and says she's scared and there's snot running down her nose. I'm like, are you serious? Are you serious? You're going to take one of the most iconic shots in horror movie history. Now, whether you like Blair Witch or not, that's a fact. That moment in Blair Witch is a classic moment in horror films. It's a classic moment. Close-up of the scared girl not knowing what's going on, darkness all around her, crying. oh, I'm so scared. They do it in this movie. And I was like, okay, you know, I might have to punch people right now. But the thing is, I would have punched a bunch of people, except that everybody else in the theater hated it as well.
Yeah.
And it got like it got booed when it was over. But I do want to mention one quick thing. As everybody was walking out of the theater, so everybody's walking out of the theater. Like this guy's girlfriend is like, man, that was the stupidest movie I've ever seen in my life. It was so stupid. It wasn't scary. It was stupid. And she just kept going on and on and on. And clearly the guy was like looking at his phone. Yeah. One of those deals where he's like checking his phone. Cause he clearly, like a good patron, had it off. Mm-hmm. Movie ended. He's now checking to see if he got any phone calls or texts. So he's looking at his phone. He's clearly much more interested in his phone than what his girlfriend is saying. And I'm behind these two as we're walking out of the theater, and she's just going on and on about how sucky the movie was. It was terrible. It was terrible. And then he puts his phone back into his pocket. He looks at it. He goes, "Is I?" Right. My favorite moment of the evening was that.
There you go.
So, all right, guys, hang on. We've got to review the new movies. We've got Ant-Man and Trainwreck to review, which we will do. Movie reviews right here on 720 WGN. Yeah, it's Nick DiGilio. I'm back. I was sick. I'll give you an explanation as to what happened and all that cool stuff. And I talked about it at the top of the show, but I know a lot of people are getting up right now. And getting ready for work, and I've been out for weeks. I was in the hospital for a little while, and then I recuperated and recovered at my parents' house for a few weeks. But here I am. I'm back. I'm live, and I will give you an explanation. And I want to thank everybody again for all the kind stuff that you sent via email and via Facebook and all the really wonderful thoughts and cards I received and all kinds of cool stuff. So thank you for that. And I'm back, and we're doing the movie reviews. We're wrapping them up. We got the two big movies to talk about this weekend. Eric and Colin are back. All right. Let's see. Colin.
Yeah.
Tell us about Trainwreck.
All right. Well, this is the latest Judd Apatow comedy, and it stars Amy Schumer, who wrote it. And she's a woman who writes for a sort of Cosmo-type magazine. And, you know, she's single. She lives a life where she goes out at night and comes home with or goes home with a different guy almost every night. And she binge drinks and smokes and, basically lives up to the film's title. And even dates sort of hulky Marine played by John Cena for a little bit. And she's assigned to do this sports-related story for her magazine, and she has very little interest in sports. But she meets a top sports physician played by Bill Hader, and they sort of form a friendship and a relationship. And she also has a sister played by Brie Larson, who has a husband, and they have two kids, or they have one kid. And her father, played by Colin Quinn, is in a nursing home, and she has to care for him as well. I was only recently introduced to Amy Schumer, you know, within the last month or so. I don't have cable, so I've never seen her show until this stuff came out on DVD. And I find it really funny and really, her points of, her satire is, I think, pretty brilliant. And I was kind of surprised at what a conventional script she wrote, a very conventional rom-com script with a lot of the same tropes that we've seen countless times about a character like this, who's unable to commit to people, and sort of the same kind of story beats that we see that were often actually parodied last year and They Came Together. Now, that being said, I think the movie is very funny. I think she's very good in it, and I think Bill Hader is, continuing, with giving another strong performance, both comedically and dramatically. And the supporting characters, I think, do mostly well. I think LeBron James pretty much steals every scene he's in, which is a huge surprise. But at the same time, it's kind of just by the numbers conventional romantic comedy that I was kind of surprised came from someone like Amy Schumer, who, used her show to do a brilliant parody of Aaron Sorkin and people like that, and taking on those kinds of conventions and really just having fun with them. I think it's an entertaining enough film. I'm sort of mixed positive on it, but I kind of expected something a little more original.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. Eric.
I think it's much better than that. I think it's the funniest film of the year, and I think if you just the surface level stuff, if you just look at the plot description and whatnot, it does seem like just sort of your average rom-com or conventions of rom-com that we've seen before. But I think there's a bit more going on in the movie, and I think that Schumer, and particularly when it gets to the Schumer and Hader stuff. That there's some really interesting things going on. One of the things Colin didn't mention is the whole idea of Colin Quinn's father character basically, warding her off of the idea of monogamy from the very beginning of her childhood, basically. The way I think that sort of manifests into her adulthood and something that she's believes in for better or worse. So I think that there is a little bit something more going on in this movie, besides the fact that it's absolutely incredibly funny. LeBron James is right, steals a lot of the stuff. John Cena is really funny in the movie. Bill Hader is just turned into one of the most likable leading men out there today. And Amy Schumer is a star. I think Trainwreck is great. It was my favorite film that I saw South by Southwest this year. I think it's pretty terrific.
Yeah. I hate to pee on everybody's parade, but I did not like this movie. There are laughs in it, and in fact, there are some big laughs in it. Let me put it to you this way. Amy Schumer has written a script here that is below Screenwriting 101. It's a terrible script. It is a terrible script. And, Colin, you're being kind about it having the tropes of rom-com. Every beat in this movie is predictable. Every beat in the script is predictable. And whenever Amy Schumer tries to go beyond being I'm a chick who can tell penis jokes and who can tell sex jokes and do it really well. There's a eulogy scene in this movie that I thought was embarrassing. Anytime that she tries to get serious and starts crying, no, she can't do it. She can't do it. It's also not very well written. The only time this movie is funny is when she's not on screen. All of the stuff between LeBron James and Hader, hilarious. The Cena stuff, she's in that, but that Cena dominates that stuff. Dave Attell has a really funny homeless guy that he plays in this movie. You got Tilda Swinton, who virtually unrecognizable as her boss in this movie, and a bunch of other people who would do this. Now, Amy Schumer wrote the script, and I know that. And to me, this is just a hunch. And the stuff that Amy Schumer does that is funny in the movie are throwaway gags that she could put in her TV show on Comedy Central. To me, all this stuff that I find funny, it's an Apatow movie. So to me, I'm guessing 90% of the stuff that I laughed at was improvised. That's just a guess. Because, he lets these people go. And I would imagine that a lot of that stuff, because there's like references that are thrown in here and there. What was that, Dan, the reference to Felipe was so great in Crash. There's like all these like quick references that are thrown in there. But to me, it just I just don't like it. There were moments in the movie that I laughed really hard, but there wasn't enough of them. And this is just, I just think it's a really bad screenplay. So, yeah. Anyway, sorry.
Okay.
Eric.
Yes.
Ant-Man. Real quickly, what'd you think of it, Eric?
I enjoyed this movie. I didn't know what to expect going in. What I was pleasantly sort of surprised with this movie is that it's basically a kids movie. I think that this is not a PG-13 film. This is a PG film with a lot of really funny sight gags in it. It takes a while to get going. The first 70 minutes of the movie is a lot of setup, a lot of stuff we've seen in the Marvel world before with training and origin stories and stuff like that. But this movie, you know, for the most part, once it gets to the final 40 minutes, has the sort of the charm and the sort of the unforced goofiness that a lot of people found in Guardians of the Galaxy that I just didn't see. And I found it in this movie. The cast is really good at doing it. The last 40 minutes are incredibly entertaining at times and sometimes really funny. I walked away with, you know, sort of a smile on my face, and I wanted to sort of recommend this movie to parents and their kids. Is this you know, a Marvel movie that they could take to that's not that violent?
Right.
You know, and it's just a movie that
He does say asshat at one point, though.
Well, he says asshat. Yeah, big deal.
Right.
Big deal.
All right, Colin, what do you think?
Not quite as high on it as Eric is, although I've been saying for a long time, I'm really sick of the whole Marvel thing. I'm sick of the superhero thing. I was hoping that this would be a movie that would separate itself from the other ones and it would have some kind of a personality to it, like, you know, Spider-Man 2 or Ang Lee's Hulk or, you know, the first Avengers movie. And I think it has that only in spurts. You know, I think the last chase scene, I think it definitely has that Edgar Wright, Adam McKay, Paul Rudd feel to it, where they're just throwing in gags that are really funny.
Yeah.
I mean, really funny. But I just think the majority of it feels restrained, and I kind of feel like there's a missed opportunity here to make a really interesting and better Marvel movie to separate itself from the rest of them.
Wow. So. I liked it more than either of you guys. I thought it was terrific. I had a blast. I thought it was so much fun. And, you know, you're talking about the last 40 minutes. I'm never going to look at Thomas the Tank Engine the same again. It made me laugh so hard. It's a very funny movie. I think Paul Rudd does a terrific job in it. I do want to say this. You mentioned Edgar Wright and you mentioned Adam McKay. Let me tell you exactly. I can pinpoint two scenes that Adam McKay wrote. And I know that he wrote a lot of stuff in it, but I can pinpoint two scenes. The two scenes where Michael Pena is explaining how he found out about heists.
See, I thought those were Edgar Wright scenes.
No. Have you ever watched Drunk History?
No.
Adam McKay created that. He helped create that show on Die or Laugh or Die or
Funny
whatever.
Or Die.
Yeah, exactly. and that, you know, but that could have been Wright as well. But that to me felt like McKay.
Okay.
But overall, I thought it was I had an absolute blast. And one of the maybe I enjoyed it more because it was the first time I went to see a movie with both my parents sitting next to me in I'm not kidding, years. And it was the last night that I stayed at my parents' house as I recovered. And we all went out and saw it. They both had a blast. They both thought it was great. And I don't know. I just had so it was the circumstances upon, you know, and that affects it.
Sure.
It was the circumstances upon seeing it. I found it hugely entertaining, and I loved it. I thought it was great. So, and I highly recommend that you see Ant-Man, and I agree with you, Eric. It should be rated PG.
Yep.
All right, what do we got next week?
What is next week?
Southpaw,
we got Paper Towns, and we got Pixels.
Pixels.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that they're really, really not saying it's an Adam Sandler movie?
No, they're saying it's a Chris Columbus movie now.
Yeah, exactly. It's a special effects movie, and then there's a quick shot of Adam Sandler
because
they want people to come and they want people to come and see it.
There better be some Galaga in it. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, there better be. There better be, man. All right, Eric, Colin, thanks, guys. It was great to catch up again.
And welcome back, buddy.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, and we'll do it again next week.
Cool.
All right. There's Eric. There's Colin. Movie reviews on Monday morning, and that's what happens. We'll take a quick break here for the news on 720 WGN.